Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, this special edition on this Sunday, May 23rd, 2010, as we look ahead towards Game 3 of the Western Conference Finals as the Los Angeles Lakers travel to Phoenix to play the Phoenix Suns. Lakers are up, of course, 2-0, and the game will be starting around 8:30. TNT will be a pregame at 8 o'clock, and, you know, roughly about an hour or so. And this is basically, you know, this is the, possibly the last bit of competitiveness out of the conference finals that we can get. This is the last hope. You know, the Orlando-Boston series is basically on ice. If Phoenix can come out here, play a great game, win, then you have to watch Game 4 with the possibility of them tying the series. They come out here and perform that day, perform like they performed the first two games, then we're all count down until Lakers-Celtics, which we'll be doing for the next roughly 12 days, because the NBA Finals will start to June 3rd. So, you know, this, again, you know, this is it as far as, again, a competitive aspect of the conference finals. Up until this point, Phoenix has shown no resistance defensively. The Lakers have gotten every shot they wanted to get. They want to get offensively. The Lakers have been able to do whatever they want to do inside out, whether it's five or 3-point shots, whether it's Gasol on them, pounding the Suns inside, offensive rebounding, the whole 9 yards. The problem for Phoenix, and one thing you recognize in the first two games, is they're not going to win a game based on what they do defensively. It's all about what they do or what they can do from an offensive standpoint, meaning they have to go small, and they're going to have to go predominantly small. And again, I know what you're saying. Well, Gasol will pound them, you know, Bynum will pound them, Odom will pound them. Well, so be it, because they're not stopping those guys anyway. Especially Gasol and Ono. So, I mean, they're going to go to the line, probably going to see Nash, Richardson, Jared Dudley, Grant Hill, and Stoudemire, or, you know, Nash, Richardson, Grant Hill, Channing Frye, he can make a shot in Stoudemire. I mean, Stoudemire's going to play center. That's going to have to be a lineup. Because if you have Robin Lopez and Stoudemire on the front line, then the game is slowed down. And frankly, you're not going to get enough scoring out of the front court to even compete with the Lakers, or to even slow down the Lakers. They're not going to win it with defense. It's become clear through the first two games they have no answers for the Lakers as far as from a defense standpoint. They're going to have to win a game where they score like 130, 135 points, period, and hope that the Lakers cool down offensively. I think from a defensive standpoint, the way that they will want to come at the Lakers again is to, you know, I think you make the Lakers beat you from the outside but contesting their 3-point shots. I mean, the 3-point shots the Lakers are getting are just too easy. I mean, not only are they not being contested, nobody's even running at the guy. I mean, Ron Artest is open by like 10 feet. Jordan Farmer, these guys, you can't leave these guys that open. I understand the whole premise that you have Kobe Bryant, you want to double team him. You have Gasol, you want to double team him. You have to give up something. You can't double team them and not give up shots. But the shots the Lakers are getting are too easy. I mean, these are pro players. These are NBA players. They practice these shots. I'm sure Ron Artest takes, you know, hundreds and hundreds of 3-point shots, just knowing that teams might do this to him. Ron Artest is going to make those shots when he's absolutely wide open. He's a standstill 3-point shooter. He's streaky, but again, if you leave him wide open to a point to where you're not even running at him, forget about getting a hand in his face, where you're not even running at him, he's going to make those shots. So to me, I feel like the Suns have to try to run the Lakers out of the building, have to speed up the tempo. It should be easier for them to run at home, and they're going to have to go small in order to beat the Lakers. And another thing, I mean, as far as Nash and Stoudemire go, you need more out of those two players. I mean, those are your two best players. Amari Palmer cannot get outplayed by Lamar Odom. Is it? I mean, you like Lamar Odom through the first two games is averaging 18 points and 15 rebounds. Palmer, yes, is averaging more points by two, averaging 20 points, but he's only averaging 4.5 rebounds. He has to pick up. Yeah, I mean, at some point, Palmer has had to take the challenge from a defensive standpoint and from a rebounding standpoint, whether he's playing against Odom or playing against Gasol, and just say, hey, I'm gonna go out there, I'm gonna get 10 or 15 rebounds. I'm gonna block a couple of shots. I'm going to impact the game other than my offense. And offensively, he hasn't been great. I mean, Stoudemire has just been, and you know, Stoudemire has been dominated by Lamar Odom and Paul Gasol. I mean, there's no getting around it. Steve Nash again has not played well in the series. I know he's averaging 14, 15 assists, but he hasn't scored more. I mean, he has to be 20. He has to get 20 to 25. He has to get, you know, 10 to 15 assists. But that means, you know, he will impact the game much more if he scores more points. You know, he'll get his teammates going. He'll get the crowd into it. He needs to score more. And one adjustment that Alvin Jeffrey is going to have to do, and I know he's not going to like it. Nash is going to play more minutes. I mean, Nash comes out towards the end of the first quarter. You can't bring him in roughly, you know, 6 minutes into the second quarter, like with only 7 minutes. You got to bring him in after, I would say, probably the 8 minute mark of the second quarter. You can't sit him that long and you know allow the Lakers to jump down your throats in the second quarter. He has to play more minutes. Can't have him off the floor as many minutes. You cannot have him off the floor in long stretches unless you have a big lead. Which leads me to my next point. You're gonna know about this game. You're gonna know what direction this game is going in very quickly, because if Phoenix, in order for Phoenix to win this game, I think they have to blow out the Lakers. I think they have to jump on them first quarter, 35-20, 38-21. They have to have a 10-15 point lead out of the first quarter. If this game is close, within a possession, 3 to 5 points, when the Lakers are up in the first quarter, then they have no chance. Then Phoenix has no chance. Phoenix has to make the Lakers know, send the Lakers a message to the Lakers that, hey, we're not folding up. We're not folding our tent. We're going to fight you. You're going to have to beat us. And to me, sending that message is jumping down the Lakers' throat, hitting them in the mouth right away, and coming out with a double-digit lead, a 10-15 point lead in the first quarter and through the first quarter. Make the Lakers play from come from behind and take your chances. You can't go toe to toe with the Lakers in the first quarter and expect to win this game. Because if it is a close game, the Lakers are going to win it. But if there's a blowout and Phoenix is favored, then Phoenix has a chance if they jump on the Lakers early. They have a chance. Again, to me, this game will be dictated by how this first quarter goes. And again, the Lakers are up, or if the game is close, they will win this game. It'll be very interesting to see how Phoenix guards Kobe Bryant. First game, they go one-on-one with him. He scores 40. Net last game two, did a lot of double and triple teaming, mostly double teaming, against 13 assists. If I'm guarding Kobe Bryant, I'm probably gonna go at him one on one and make him take and try to bait him into taking a lot of shots. Make him take 25 to 30 shots and hope he, you know, has an off night shooting. I'm not gonna allow him to pick my defense apart and get everybody else involved. When you double team, that's one of the underrated aspects about Bryant's game. He is an excellent passer out of double team. He's been getting double team forever. I mean, basically, since Shaquille O'Neal left 60 years ago, was traded. I mean, he's been getting double team. He gets double team all the time. He knows how to pick apart his double team, and now he has weapons. Whether he gets all on them, buying them, you know, guys that he can go to that can make plays, make shots, and again, you'll have another 10-15 assist game. You're better off with Kobe being a scorer more than you are him being a facilitator and playmaker. Because when he's in an attacking mode as a facilitator, as a playmaker, then the Lakers are basically unbeatable. I mean, if he's going out there and, you know, only taking 15 to 20 shots and having everybody, getting everybody else involved, getting everybody else shot, then you can't beat the Lakers. I mean, it's almost impossible to defend because everybody else has gotten going. Now, if you go out there and allow him, you know, he's throwing up a lot of shots, he may be scoring some. Guy, you know, Gasol's frustrated, he's not getting the ball. Odin's frustrated, he's not getting the ball. Shooters aren't getting their shots. Then you have a chance. And to me, that's the way to go if you're a Phoenix Suns. But again, that's how I would defend the Lakers. But the bottom line is, if Phoenix is to win this game, they're going to win it with their offense. Defensively, they can't do anything with the Lakers from a defense standpoint. They don't have that type of personnel. They don't have the size up front. They don't have one great individual defender. Grant Hill's an okay defender. But Grant Hill's not a great defensive player. And defensively, it's not, you know, I know the first two rounds, you know, people thought they played good defense. But again, you know, those teams were, you know, from an offensive standpoint, had limitations from offensively, especially Portland. So they're going to have to win this game with their offense. I don't know what to expect at this point from Shannon Frye. He seems to struggle up against the Los Angeles Lakers. He hasn't played well against the Lakers all season. If you get a good game out of him, it's a bonus as far as I'm concerned. I don't know what the Suns are gonna expect out of him in this particular game. But we'll see what happens. But again, to me, Nash and Stoudemire have to not be good. They have to dominate and be great. And to try and somewhere try to match what you're getting out of Bryant and Gasol. Still to come on this 45-minute edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, as we look ahead towards Game 3 of the Western Conference Finals. We're going to look back at last night's ambush in Boston. We'll look at what's going on in that series, and also watch everybody else get the pleasure of talking about LeBron James. We'll start our own Summer of LeBron countdown. We'll do that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back. Minutes after the 7 o'clock hour. Again, we're going up to 7:45 on this special Saturday Morning Wake Up Call edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, looking ahead towards Game 3 of the Western Conference Finals between the Lakers and Suns as a series moves to Phoenix. Last night, of course, the Boston Celtics, they sealed up their second Eastern Conference Finals in 3 years by just smacking around the Orlando Magic 94-71. They have 3-0. They're going to sweep them again. This series will be overcome tomorrow night. And to me, you know, before the series started, I thought Boston would win the series. I thought it would be a very tough 7-game series. I thought it would be borderline a classic series. But the Orlando Magic, to me, have shown you how a team can be just mentally taken apart by a championship caliber team. They show you just how soft they are. That was a word that was in my head last night watching Orlando. Just how soft of a team they are. Number one, from a basketball standpoint, and I said this before the season, when they went out, made these moves, changed up the team, allowed Turkaloo to sign with Toronto, brought in Vince Carter, that they, despite the fact that they might have more talent than what they had last year, Vince Carter will be in the Hall of Fame someday, but is a regular season basketball player. Meaning, Vince Carter, his game has never traveled to the postseason. He's had one good postseason in his whole career, and that was in 2001. But this is not a guy who you're going to count on as your legit number two in a regular season, in the postseason, to try to help you win a championship. You weren't bringing him in as a blender. You were bringing him in to play well and depending on him to fill the void that was left by one Hidu Turkoglu. Which leads me to my next point. They have not adequately replaced Hidu Turkoglu. Hidu Turkoglu, now you can say what you want about him. You can say that he's overpaid, had a terrible season in Toronto, and those things are true. But the bottom line is, that guy was a clutch player for Orlando last year. He made big shots. He created shots for other people. He got the ball to people in the right places. They're three-point shooters. He was a nightmare to deal with as far as dribble penetration. He was the engine that made that team go last year. Period. And you didn't, like, to me, again, I said it in the summertime, that when Orlando was making his moves, if they bring Vince Carter and have Turkoglu, then that's a dynamite. And then I can understand the move. But to have Vince Carter, to think that Vince Carter was going to come in and be that playmaker and be that clutch player in the postseason, it was not going to happen. And that's what they learned from the beginning. From a basketball standpoint, that is what Orlando is lacking. From, you know, we're talking X's and O's, and we're talking X's and O's and what have you. They don't have any playmakers. Jameer Nelson is a guy who, good player, is a scoring point guard, is not going to create offense for other people. He's not. There was a play last night where Dwight Howard got a 3-second call, which wasn't his fault. He was open for about 20 seconds in the lane. Jameer Nelson took forever to get him the ball. He had Rasheed Wallace had him in perfect position down low, about 6 feet from the bucket, 6 feet from the basket. But again, Jameer Nelson didn't have a court vision. He's only about 6'6", at that, might even 5'11". I'm giving him too much credit from that standpoint. So he couldn't see him. With that said, the way Orlando is playing, the way they have mentally just crumbled and wilted, it might not even make a difference whether Turkoglu was there or not. Because they have been just mentally that weak mentally in this series. I mean, Orlando, truthfully, this series has not been a close series. I think everybody was fooled by the first two games. The only reason those games had close scores was because Boston basically fell asleep at the wheel in the fourth quarters of those games and allowed Orlando to get back in those games in Orlando. Boston has absolutely dominated this series. Boston, to me, right now, is obviously playing better than anybody in the playoffs. Defensively, they're looking like they were back in 2008. Though, be careful based on their opponents. Be careful, okay, thinking that they're a dominant defensive team based on how one-dimensional their opponents have been in the last couple of rounds. But they're playing offensively, they do not need a guy in the series to drop 25 to 30 points. They get great balance. Rondo is doing what he does. Pierce has gotten loose. You know, Garnett hasn't even had to be spectacular in the series. Has had some decent games, but they haven't even needed him to be what he was in the Cleveland series. But they're just getting, I mean, their bench has been great. Wallace, Glenn Davis, and Tony Allen. And to me, they just have mentally and physically taken apart the Orlando Magic in every shape, way, shape, or form. I mean, Boston, to me, Orlando is just, you know, is Boston that much better than them to accept it and be about 25 points in a conference finals game? And I don't know what everybody wants to blame Sam Van Gundy. You know, yeah, the coach, he's the coach of the team. He has to take some of the heat. But the bottom line is his team is just folded. I mean, Rashawn Lewis, this is a guy who last year, you know, along with Turkoglu, had some big playoff games and big playoff series against Cleveland and Orlando. Excuse me, Cleveland and Boston. He's having about 6 points a game in the series, if that. Has not impacted the game at all. Is not even looking to shoot, not looking to be aggressive, not looking to do much of anything. So again, I expect Boston to finish off Orlando tomorrow. I'd be shocked if they did not. if Orlando was going to do anything in this series, it would have been in game three. Once they were down, you know, what was it, 29-12, 27-12 in the first quarter, that was it. They cannot generate any, the bottom line is they can't generate any offense against Boston. If Boston is going to take away their three-point shots and basically play Dwight Howard not dominate the series, scoring 30 to 35 points a game, then where are they getting offense from? You have no Rashad Lewis. I mean, they can't score any points. I mean, truthfully, after this series, Orlando is going to have to rethink their style of play in terms of how their team is built. That's how much they've been exposed by the Boston Celtics in this series. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, the summer on LeBron has begun. We'll look at the team he's least likely to go to come July 1st or a little bit after that. We'll talk about that and also the draft lottery. The Wizards finally catch a break. Still to come. That's still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Welcome back to the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call on this Sunday. Talking about game three of the Western Conference Finals between the Lakers and Suns, which is coming up in about an hour or so on TNT. We want to shift gears a little bit and stick with the NBA and talk about LeBron James. And why should everybody else have the fun of talking about LeBron and this, you know, which is the biggest story in all of sports this summer? Of course, he's going to be—he is a free agent. He'll be free to sign with July 1st. He'll be free to sign with any team he wants to come July 8th. And I'm going to start my own countdown of teams that go from the least likely team—the team that he's least likely to end up with—onto the team that he will be most likely to end up with. We'll start part one of that. And it'll take us up to about July, June 27th, where I'll give you the team that I think he's going to end up with. The least likely team I think he's going to end up with right now is the New Jersey Nets. Now, to show you how big the draft lottery is, have they been able to get a number one pick and, you know, and draft more than likely John Wall, I would have put the Nets right up there as one of the teams that he probably would have went to. That's one of the top two or three teams that he would have went to. But to me, not getting John Wall playing in Newark eliminates that possibility that he's going to play for the Nets. Nets have some nice pieces. I mean, Brook Lopez doesn't have that number three pick, which, you know, they can go to Marcus Cousins, Derek Favors, and maybe anyone else. Those would probably be the two players that they would probably draft, or one of those two players, probably Favors. But they just don't have enough to entice LeBron to play in Newark, number one, you know, in Newark, number for 2 years. And he don't have the talent. I mean, he wants to go to that team. You put LeBron James on that team, yes, they would make the playoffs, but would they be as good as Orlando, as good as Boston probably next year? Probably not. Even with him playing with Brook Lopez, Devin Harris, Terrence Williams, Chris Evans-Roberts, that team still would not have enough to compete for a championship. The team that LeBron goes to, and keep this in mind, they may not have to win a championship next year, but they're going to be a championship contender. Okay, LeBron, I think a lot of people the thing that people are missing about the LeBron thing is that this idea that he's going to go to a team that's supposed to win a championship right away. No, that's not going to happen. That's not what he's thinking about. Okay, look, he honestly believes that he has a couple of years to not win a championship and to still build up his brand, still, you know, have his team compete for championships, and then to win a championship, say, at the age of 27, 28. That's what he's thinking. So the team he goes to next year will not have to win a championship in his mind. That will not be the ultimate, the thing that ultimately determines the team that he goes to. Or if that was the case, then you know it would be the Chicago Bulls in a landslide. So I give the New Jersey Nets the least chance out of all the teams that are in the mix. And again, yeah, Chicago's in the mix. You have the Knicks are in the mix. You have the Clippers. You have, I would say, Dallas, which is possibly a sign and trade. They're in the mix. Miami, you have to toss them in there, even though I think that's not going to happen. So those are your teams that have a legit chance at acquiring, and of course Cleveland as well. Those are teams that have a legitimate chance at acquiring LeBron James this summer. But keep your eyes on that. One team, you know, the one dark horse to keep your eyes on out of those teams I just mentioned is the Dallas Mavericks. Dallas Mavericks don't have cap space. What they do have is the ability to pull off a sign and trade, and you know, they have the pieces. They can give Cleveland some nice pieces. Cleveland would move him out of the Eastern Conference in the Western Conference to stay away from. So he wants to beat their brains in for four times a year. And you know, Dallas is in a mode to where they're in win now. I mean, they're in a mode to where they're trying to win a championship right now. Cuban is going to try. You know, he wants to try to pair somebody up with Dirk, realizing that he needs another star player. So keep your eyes on the Dallas Mavericks as a dark horse possibly to get LeBron James. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll look at the draft lottery and look at how one team's fortunes changed all in just one night. Look at that, and also I will give you my prediction on the Western Conference Finals Game 3 Lakers-Suns. We'll talk about that and much more still to come on this edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Welcome back, 27 minutes after the 7 o'clock hour, taking you up to 7:45 as we preview Game 3 of the Western Conference Finals between the Suns and Lakers. Before I get to the prediction of that game, of course you had the draft lottery. You know, you had the draft lottery this week, and the Wizards finally the Wizards have something that goes well for them after a tumultuous year where they saw, you know, Gilbert Arenas get suspended for gun charges. They had an awful season, had to trade everybody, and just were one of the laughingstocks of the NBA this year. They get the ping pong balls go their way. They're going to have the number one pick. And unless somebody knows something that I don't, John Wall will be the number one pick. And you absolutely have to take John Wall with that pick. I don't care about the fact that, you know, how you can pair him up with Gilbert Arenas, how that chemistry is going to be. John Wall is one of these can't-miss players. He's in the mold, to me, of a Chris Paul, of a Derrick Rose, Darren Williams. He's that type of point guard. He's going to be a dynamic player coming out of Kentucky. He used to play under pressure circumstances, playing at that program. Came in as a freshman and was, frankly, you know, the best player in the country. I mean, maybe Evan Turner had statistically was better, but as far as a pro prospect, John Wall is the way to go for the Washington Wizards. And again, if I'm the Washington Wizards, I'm getting Gilbert. And if I can't trade, the first thing I'd be trying to do is trade Gilbert Arenas. Because to be honest with you, I wouldn't want Gilbert Arenas anywhere near John Wall and possibly his influence on Wall. And I wouldn't want him anywhere near John Wall, to be honest with you. I don't think Gilbert Arenas can help John Wall. I think Gilbert Arenas will have. There'll be some jealousy because no, this that when the Wizards won that lottery, that to me signified the end of the Gilbert Arenas era as far as being the face of this franchise. That has changed now. This is John Wall's team. He is the future, the present, and the future of this franchise. You're gonna see John Wall jerseys all over the place. You're gonna see. I'm telling you, they might even put his banner up where they had Gilbert Arenas's, or his picture where they had Gilbert Arenas's on the side of the Verizon Center. It's all about John Wall right now. So the Gilbert Arenas era is over, as far as I'm concerned, as him being even relevant in terms of being the face of that franchise. You think Wizards? You're thinking John Wall. And I just don't believe that Gilbert Arenas has the kind of the personality or is humble enough or is realistic enough to deal with that. I think you'll see some jealousy. I think Arenas will try to, you know, prove himself against Wall, try to prove himself, which will hurt the team. And I think that you do everything you try to do to move Gilbert Arenas. Everything. I don't care. I'm sorry, and the Wizards have already, come out and said that Gilbert Arenas will be on the team. They said that. I don't know why they would come out and say that. But to me, if I'm Ernie Grunfeld, Ted Leonsis, and what have you, John Wall would not, Gilbert Arenas could not be on this team next year. Now, if he is on the team, and there's no way that you can move him, I feel that you take Gilbert Arenas in a room, meet up with him and say, hey, this is how it's going to be. We're building around this guy. You're either on board or you're not. If you're not on board, then you're just not going to play. I would give him that. I would just tell him I would have to be just that blunt with him. I have to be that blunt with him. We're going to try to move you. And I would go from there. You really have to make this transition as smooth as possible for John Wall. I mean, he's coming into an impossible situation with the Wizards. They're a bad team, and you have, again, more importantly, you have a guy like Gilbert Arenas who happens to play a guard position, who happens to play the other guard position. Because I don't think Gilbert Arenas is going to try to help this guy out. He's going to try to help John Wall out. I frankly don't believe he will. I think he's going to see, again, I think he'll be jealous of Wall. And I can see that being a conflict. I would not want Gilbert Arenas' influence on my franchise player. On my future of the franchise. I wouldn't want it. Look at what that said. You look at what now the Wizards have, and what now the kind of star power that we have here in the Metro DC area. And you're talking John Wall in basketball. You have Strasburg coming up, the Nationals in a couple of weeks. You have Ovechkin in hockey. You have Donovan McNabb in football. You'll have next year Bryce Harper, if the Nationals have any sense, drafting him number one. I mean, there is a lot of star power in this city right now. And if you're a fan of any of those teams in the D.C. area, you have to be excited that, that you have all these players in one city, all of them who are either established stars or have the potential to be superstars in their own right. So, again, to me, John Wall puts the Wizards back on the map. And, again, when this, 5-10 years from now, if the Wizards go about building their team, if Leonsis does what he did with the Capitals, this will be the turning point of that franchise. They'll look at May 18th as a turning point of the franchise when they were able to win the lottery and draft and go out there and draft John Wall as the number one pick. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, the final segment. I'll give you my prediction of the Western Conference Finals, and I'll also talk about a couple of other things going on in the NBA and also the world of sports as well. I'll be right back with the final segment of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call final segment as we gear up for game three of the Western Conference Finals between the Los Angeles Lakers and Phoenix Suns. Listen, I thought before this series was started that the Phoenix Suns would get at least a game, maybe two. I picked the series in six. I just thought that they, would, just from an offensive standpoint, be able to get the Lakers some trouble with that 3-point shooting and, would somewhat be able to neutralize the size advantage that the Lakers have by spreading them out and, and getting to a transition game. Of course, that has not been the case. Not only have the Lakers punished Phoenix from in the half court, they basically beaten them at their own game in terms of outrunning them. And in terms of the scores, if you thought the series was going to be played in the 120s, you would have thought Phoenix would have had the edge in terms of winning some of the games. I cannot see the Lakers, especially with what Boston is doing, I cannot see the Lakers coming out with a lackluster, half-hearted effort and not winning in this game three. Normally you see teams, game threes, kind of take a break, take a deep breath, kind of give up a game, maybe relax a little bit. I don't see that with the Los Angeles. I don't see that with the Lakers. They didn't do it against Utah, and I don't see them doing it here. They didn't, frankly, do it against Oklahoma City. As you remember that game three, they played very well for about three quarters, and then fourth quarter, Oklahoma City, kind of ran up. Oklahoma City, got by them in the fourth quarter. But, again, I think they're trying to keep up with you can't tell me that they're not trying to keep up with the Celtics, that they don't see what Boston is doing. Don't want to give Boston any kind of edge that the Lakers, that their play is slipping whatsoever. Want to get this series over with as soon as possible so they can get a ton of rest for Bynum and Kobe and some of the guys they have nicked up. I think the Lakers win this game. I do feel like this will be the closest game out of the two, and I do feel like it will be decided in single digits. I don't think they'll beat the Suns by 20 points or by 15 points. I think it'll be relatively a close game. But again, I like the Lakers in a very close game. Phoenix just does not have any answers. I mean, they don't have any answers. You also don't like Alvin Gentry's, just his mentality. I don't like some of the things he said after game two. He came off to me sounding like, a beaten coach, more than sounding like a guy who said, hey, okay, they've done what they're supposed to do in winning their first two games at home. We have to go out there and follow suit and win two games at our place. You didn't get that sense from Alvin Gentry. The sense you got from him was that, hey, the Lakers are good. They do this well. They do that well. We know that. We already know that. I did not get the sense. I mean, again, he did not sound very confident after that game two. Unlike game one, where he was saying, hey, they had a good game, we'll recover, we'll be back, we'll bounce back. He sounded great after game one, even in defeat. But after game two, he sounded like a defeated coach. To me, that carries over to your players. Don't think your players are not thinking about that as they're getting ready for game three. And, again, Phoenix right now, to me, has no answers. They go small, they can punish them. They can only go so they go big. They get killed in the half court because it slows down their transition game. I don't see this. To me, this series, like Boston series, is headed possibly towards a sweep. Maybe the Lakers, if the Lakers were to win this, maybe they will relax in game four. Phoenix could still game four. But the Lakers are not going to relax, only up two games to nothing, seeing what Boston is doing to Orlando in the Eastern Conference. This is not going to happen. Again, I like the Lakers in a close game. Again, I think this will be a very competitive, very close game. Be a little bit closer than the first two games. Phoenix has stayed with the Lakers. First game, they stayed with the Lakers relatively for a half. The second game, they hung with the Lakers for three quarters, tie game, 90-90 going into the fourth quarter. This game, I expect them to be right there with 4 or 5 minutes left, I expect the Lakers to close out the game and take and be up 3-0 in this series. As we head towards the inevitable Celtic Laker NBA Finals. A couple of notes out of the NBA that I wanted to get to in the last couple of minutes we have left on the program. Doug Collins, of course, will become the head coach of Philadelphia 76ers, leaving the TNT booth, which he does a masterful job at doing the color commentating and one of the lead analysts for TNT. And, you know, I think Collins is a very good coach. That's not the greatest situation. I know they have some talent, but I just don't think they have the right pieces. To me, Philadelphia is a team with no identity right now. You have two players that are vastly overpaid in Andre Iguodala and also Elton Brand, who have to be the two best players. To me, if I'm Doug Collins and I'm Eric Stefanski and the rest of that organization, I'm trying to move both those players and I'm trying to build. You know, they're going to have a second pick, so they're probably going to take Evan Turner. I'm trying to build around Evan Turner, Drew Holiday, and Thaddeus Young. I'm trying my best to move those contracts of Iguodala and Elton Brand. They're not going to be easy because they still have a lot of money. Both of those guys have a lot of money still left on their contracts. If somebody is willing to take them off their hands, I would do it in a heartbeat if I'm the Sixers. Because right now that team does not fit, and you don't want Brand or Iguodala getting in the way of Evan Turner, Drew Holiday. That's gonna be one of the better backcourts in the NBA in years to come. Evan Turner is gonna be a very good player. Gonna be a very good player coming out of college. Has all the tools. Drew Holiday, you saw what he could do late in the season at the point guard position. So they have a nice backcourt. Thaddeus Young is a very good player. If he's your third or fourth best player on a good team, so I mean they have a nice complement. They have some nice pieces, but the problem again is that their two best players just don't fit. Don't play well together, and are two guys that are not, they're guys that are not max salary guys who are getting big money, but they're not, but they're good, but they're decent players. Both of those guys are overpaid big time, as far as I'm concerned in terms of Brand and Iguodala. But again, I think Doug Collins will do a good job there. He's an excellent coach. If not for the Bulls firing him right before they got great, he would have won two or three championships with that Chicago team. There's no question. They're right on the cusp of winning, of being a championship team. That team was ready to win when he got fired. So the Collins can coach. He did a good job in Detroit. The Wizards situation was an impossible situation. Nobody would have salvage that situation with Michael Jordan and Kwame Brown, and you had guys just again that it was just not a fit. So you have to kind of give him a pass on that. But again, I like the move picking up Collins and getting him for Coastal Sixers. Dirk Nowitzki has decided to opt out of his contract. To me, this is a ploy for Nowitzki to get a new contract extension with the Mavericks. The Mavericks can sign him up for $96 million for 4 years. I don't see Nowitzki going anywhere else and taking less money to try to win a championship. Yes, does he want to win? He wants to win, yes, but does he want to sacrifice, take a mid-level exception? Absolutely not. He could go to another team and sign for, he could sign for less money than what the Mavericks are going to give him, but I want to see him leave Dallas. I don't think he wants to leave Dallas. A team like the Knicks can pick him up, can sign him if he's not signed before July 1st, before June is out, he will be an unrestricted free agent and will be free to go anywhere. And he's forcing Dallas to sign him right here, right now, to the extension before July 1st, to where any team can just snatch him up. Clippers, Miami, whoever. To snatch him up, so that's what this is all about. Also, he will be able to have if he signs a new deal with the kind of experience that he has, having 8 years in the league and 4 years with the same team, he will have a chance to have a no trade clause in his new contract. I will see you as the week goes on. So long. Have a great night.